Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. It is the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so good to have you here with us. We have to start with some disturbing, may I say terrifying news. Well, it's at the very least, it's scary. ABC News reports that the campaign office shared by Vice President Kamala Harris and the Democrat Party in Tempe, Arizona, was damaged by Democrat gunfire for a third time in less than a month last Sunday. That's right. Wow. The Tempe Police Department is offering a $1,000 reward for any information that leads to the arrest of the Democrat suspect. Now, in fact, it got so scary out there in Tempe that the Democrat office was closed. The campaign office was closed and moved to an undisclosed location. That's right. Now, the police chief says the only problem is that the shooter or the shooter's mom works there. And so the move might not protect the office from more late-night Democrat gunfire when no one's inside late at night. Okay. So there you go. It's a terrifying election season.
Only $1,000 for president.
Oh, I know. It's she's the sitting vice president. $1,000? Could it be that there may be folks inside the sheriff's department there? Oh, let's see. It's the silent witness program they have there that gives rewards. Could it be there are some people in there who may not be taking this as seriously as it needs to be taken? Meanwhile, you may recall last month we did not report on the fact that John Bon Jovi talked a woman off the ledge of a bridge. He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. Did you hear about that story?
Yeah.
John Bon Jovi talked a woman off the ledge of a bridge last month, and we didn't report on it because, I mean, any decent human being should just, you shouldn't really be reported on for talking someone off a bridge. The Metro Nashville Police Department sent out a tweet. Back on September 11th, 2024, John Bon Jovi helped persuade a distressed, unidentified woman to come off the ledge of the bridge over the Cumberland River to safety. Well, we now know, we have an update. We now know why the woman was going to jump. That's right. It turns out she had just watched Bon Jovi's latest video, The People's House, which is his endorsement for the Democrat for president in the election. She was apparently unable to process the cringe lyrics about privilege and whiteness without wanting to kill herself.
Oh.
And it took a personal intervention from John himself to stop her. Now, the rest of us, if you watch the video, I'll link to it. You will want to kill yourself. Or maybe you'll want to kill John Bon Jovi, or you'll want to kill his producer, or whoever's giving the guy advice. It's like, please. You don't have to tell. It's not white privilege, John. Your uncle was a record producer. We all know you were privileged. All right. Anyway, have you seen the video, he asked.
No, extreme.
Oh, I'll tell you what.
It is
cringeworthy. If you want to know why nobody has bought a John Bon Jovi record in 20 years, that's why. All right. Meanwhile, terror and widespread panic around the bird flu is escalating, increasing, and being pumped up. And so from the last laugh file, over in England, they have a department in the government that's called the Department for Environment, Food, and Rural Affairs, which that right there is a red flag that they have one of those in England. That's a sign of the end of Western civilization. A department for environment, food. A department for food? Are you kidding me? Are you telling me you think the people can't figure out food? without a government bureaucracy? I can assure you we can figure out food. But they have a department for that. And rural affairs, whatever that means. What does that mean? People who don't live in the city, we want to keep our eye on them too. So we have a department for that. That's right. They are cranking up anti-bird flu measures over there at the Department for Environment, Food, and Rural Affairs in England. And starting October 1st, in England and Wales, all outdoor bird keepers face mandatory registration of every single bird. Not only do they have to register every bird, they will be compelled for life to update their records of how many birds, what birds, which birds, every 12 months for life.
Wow.
That's right. That's right. And so registration began as what if the government calls them outdoor bird keepers. Are there other kinds of bird keepers? So, well, I mean, besides here at the McBurney compound, we have one indoor bird keeper. But as far as we know, she's the only person on the planet. So anyway, outdoor bird keepers. They keep their birds in bird housing, of course. Anyway. So registration began because it's part of the bird flu strategy to get everyone afraid of the bird flu. Register all your birds. And so apparently not everyone in England is all that enamored with the Department for Environmental, Food, and Rural Affairs bird registry. And so people began successfully registering all of their store-bought chickens. Frozen chickens, fresh chickens, free-range chickens, every chicken. Until they crashed the government website.
Oh, that's funny.
Uh-huh. In fact, there was a group in Westminster called Guido Fox. They have a reporter who dresses as a chicken and goes around and does interviews, and he registered on the site before it crashed. So this is the last laugh file, but here's the thing. If the socialist infrastructure that supports such ridiculous, ludicrous, and dangerous things as the Department for Environmental, Food, and Rural Affairs, if that's not all dismantled, then we'll laugh at the moment with the chicken suit and the frozen chickens. That's funny. But the communists running the criminally insane sex cult will end up having the last laugh. If we don't dismantle these communist infrastructure, this should be a wake-up call. But that we should have had those. We've had wake-up calls for so long that I don't know how people aren't awake. Anyway, let's go now from the chicken registry to the widespread hysteria file, where the popular real estate app Zillow has added a new feature that will describe the climate change risk data for each listing. So you go list your house on Zillow now, they're going to have a score, a climate change risk score for your property to, according to Zillow, inform home buyers of the alleged environmental impact of each property. I'm sorry, that's according to, who's reporting this? Amgreatness.com. I could tell that wasn't Zillow because they said alleged environmental impact. Zillow would have just been screaming at the top of their lungs, environmental impact! There's a house on the property! That's bad! That has a significant environmental impact! But the folks at Am Greatness say that that's alleged. Each property is given a score by an outfit called First Street, which is no doubt a bunch of communists. Property is scored for its impact on flooding, fires, wind, air, and heat. Impact on air? Okay. There's a house, and there's dogs and cats. They sprinkle the yard. It affects the air. And so they score all this. First Street, the outfit running this thing, lays out predictions about the next 15 to 30 years of the property's environmental impact future, frequently guessing that most properties are at risk of flooding due to polar ice melt and higher sea levels that are predicted. And then they have a link so that you can buy flood insurance, which no doubt they have no interest in any of that. They will link you Zillow's chief economist was asked about this. And Zillow's chief economist, Skyren Olson.
Skyren?
Oh, I'm sorry, Skyler. Skyren Olson issued a statement. He was asked about it, and he issued a statement because he didn't want to take any questions on this. Be happy just to issue a statement and walk away from that whole situation. But his statement did justify the new feature. Skyren said, "As concerns about flooding, extreme temperatures, and wildfires grow, this tool helps inform clients about climate risk, insurance, and long-term affordability." And then there's a link right there for insurance. Did you get your insurance? There's a link right there. Okay. All right. And so that's from the widespread hysteria file. There's no word yet, though, on if Zillow will begin including realistic property value estimates. Apparently, that's not on the list over there at Zillow. Okay. You can just go over there and fantasize about how your house is worth $1.2 million. Oh, yeah. Okay. Like that helps. Okay. So from there, we go to the politics file where Tina Peters out in Colorado, she was thrown in prison last week for 9 years. And it turns out what she did to break the law, they say she illegally accessed the voting data. Well, what she did was made a backup of the voting data. Uh-huh. And the backup, let's see here, according to basedunderground.com, and Natural News, which there was a time when I thought the people at Natural News were kooky because they said that the government could not be trusted with the vaccination program. And I thought that was kooky. And then it turns out I was incorrect. And so I go to Natural News now and I actually take a lot of their stories seriously because, well, they were ahead of the curve on the whole vaccine thing and a lot of other things. Anyway, they report that former Mesa County, Colorado election official Tina Peters backed up the proof she compiled showing that the 2020 election was manipulated. No way. Are you telling me that election was faked or stolen or manipulated in any way? What with the shutting down at midnight and the taping over of windows and trucks backing up to the boxes coming out, and no way. Shocking allegations. Election denialism. She says that criminals deleted the audit trail and system logs before replacing real voter files with fake ones. And this fellow, John Strand, who spent time in jail for January 6th, he was there. He's a reporter. He posts up all these. Well, I mean, if you can believe what he posted, and I have no reason not to believe him, I have much more reason to doubt anyone associated with Dominion voting systems and all of that than I do this guy. He posts up these logs where it sure looks like things were changed from what she backed up to what was eventually reported as the election results. It sounds to me, or it looks to me, that Tina Peters, she backed up the election data before they wiped it and replaced it. And that's why she's in prison. Mm-hmm. And the only reason that she wasn't able to prove what happened, this would be a smoking gun, according to the reporter John Strand. But the only way to know if it indicates tampered ballot images is to review the paper ballots, which have all been destroyed. It's just diabolical. So they steal the election in broad daylight in front of God and everybody. This lady catches them. They have her arrested, destroy all the files that could prove what she said was true. And then they throw her in prison for 9 years. I know. We'll be right back. Weekly Worldview. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. It's absolutely diabolical. But is there any hope with the upcoming election, the most important election in all of human history? The most important election for the next 1,000 years. Is there any hope? Well, we have an article from The Federalist. And I'm not going to name the author because I don't want to embarrass him or her. But the headline on the Federalist article is The Christian Case for Voting for Trump. And I've seen a lot of these over the past week because it has become apparent that there are a lot of Christians who are simply not going to vote because of what Donald Trump has said about baby killing. It's just too much to stomach. And it's quite possible that there are a lot of Christians who are ready to say, you know what, America? You're just going to get what you deserve on this one. We're sitting this one out because you people are so disgusting. We don't want to be associated with any of you any longer. And that's not good news for Donald Trump because it is the bamboozled evangelical demographic that is going to pull him over the finish line if he is going to be able to overcome the massive cheating and lying and diabolical voting machine fakery and whatever they've got against him. The guided missiles, the heat-seeking missiles to blow him off the face of the planet, shoot down his plane. If anything's going to help him overcome all of the forces arrayed against him, and he actually makes it to the election, which it seems like they just can't hit the guy. They're just a bunch of... The one thing that we can count on for some hope is the fact that these people are generally incompetent and distracted, and they're too busy getting high and whatever it is, playing video games, watching anime, and getting tattoos, and going to rave parties. That's the only thing that's stopped them from utterly destroying everything. So now, where was I? The bamboozled evangelical demographic is highly necessary for Donald Trump to win the election, should he not be killed before the election. And so I've seen a lot of these articles. This one's out of The Federalist, The Christian Case for Voting for Trump. There was someone who wrote an open letter to Lila Rose. Lila, please vote for Donald Trump if you care about babies. So here we go. The Christian Case for Voting for Trump. This is from the Craven Politics file. The author opens up, staying home is not the moral high ground this election. Voting for Donald Trump is. So that right there tells you that the polling indicates that they know that there are a lot of Christians like me who are staying home. Not only are we staying home, we're not voting for either of these two. And so they know it. And so there's a full court press on to guilt trip the unsatisfactorily bamboozled evangelicals out there. We haven't bamboozled you people as easily as we've bamboozled you all these other times. What's wrong with you people? Don't you know that if Kamala Harris is elected president, there will never be another election? I want to make a prediction right now. If Donald Trump wins the vote, he will never be installed as president and there will never be another election in America. So I think we're pretty much, our goose is cooked either way, frankly. But let's go back to the carnal case for voting for Trump. Trump, according to the author here at the Federalist, Trump has never claimed to be a paragon of virtue. So they open it up by saying, look, we know the guy's a rotten, lousy, you know, I mean, obviously it's distasteful to have to vote for someone this disgusting. But they say he has never claimed to be a paragon of virtue. Actually, Donald Trump claimed that he and God have a great relationship. Which God doesn't have a great relationship with anyone who's not a paragon of virtue, at least in Donald Trump's economy. and the economy of the bamboozled evangelicals and those doing the bamboozling. Since none of them actually know the gospel, all they know is that they've heard things about Jesus that make them feel better about themselves and help them be better people. And so they like Jesus. And Donald Trump says he has a great relationship with God. And so he has claimed to be a paragon of virtue. The author at The Federalist goes on, during his first term, Trump doubled the child tax credit, expanded paid family leave. He brought back Christmas. And he moved the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. Don't you people remember that? He also took action to rescue victims from human trafficking. Okay. But he also helped the Little Sisters for the Poor. Do you people remember the Little Sisters for the Poor? Those Catholic nuns? They were going to make those Catholic nuns get abortions, and Donald Trump stepped in. The author goes on, Donald Trump also did more to protect mothers and their unborn babies than any other president in modern history. Okay, so how far back do you got to go for it to be modern history? Are you saying he did more than Eisenhower? Maybe that doesn't qualify for modern history anymore.
It's from Obama.
Is that only from Obama forward is modern history? I personally think modern history goes back to the Industrial Revolution. Early 1800s to now, to me, that's modern history. Really? No presidents? Okay. I would nominate Eisenhower, but who am I? What do I know? More, he appointed the Supreme Court that overturned Roe v. Wade, which is the greatest single victory for protecting the right to life since Roe versus Wade. They actually said that. It's the greatest thing since Roe versus Wade for protecting babies. And I'm not going to get into that because it offends and upsets so many of my conservative listeners when they hear that the overturning of Roe versus Wade was one of the greatest defeats for the right to life in the history of the world. The federal government codifying by law that the states have the right to regulate the murder of innocent people. But let's move on from that because we're busy with some bamboozling here. Let's not get distracted by the facts. The author over at The Federalist continues, some Christians may be disappointed that Trump will leave abortion policy up to the states. But the reality is, here's where I want to grab you Christians by the collar and jerk you right in face to face. I want to talk to you about reality. The reality is, advocating for a nationwide abortion ban is a recipe for sure defeat, given the current political environment. And as Christians, that's what we need to take into consideration first, is the current political environment. Damn it! People, listen to me. So, basically, the folks over at the Federalist, the fake, phony, baloney evangelicals, they're of the opinion that our position should be guided by whether or not we can win, rather than whether or not we do what's right. And that's an indication to me that they really don't know God and they don't understand the Bible. I know they let Christians advertise and you can buy Christian boots and gloves and camping equipment, water purifiers and coffee machines.
Is it Christian,
though? Christian stuff. Right wing conservative. But do they actually know God? So encouraging a Christian to make a calculus based on the current political environment is satanic. That's satanic. Get ye behind me, Satan. All right, there we go. Did he just say the Federalist was satanic? All right. Well, I mean, let's just move on to the Craven Politics File, where we check in with Melania Trump. One of the most craven No, he's not going to insult Melania Trump now, is he? She's America's first lady, the greatest first lady in modern history. She's done more to protect women and children than any first lady in modern history. She came out with a statement last week, as reported by Breitbart. She says, I fully support LGBTQIA plus community. And she said all the letters and the plus. She said all the letters and the plus, the greatest first lady, the most conservative first lady in American history. I'm sorry, modern history. I mean, Martha Washington might have been slightly more conservative. Possibly. Mimi Eisenhower, maybe. So, Melania said, I fully support the LGBTQIA plus community. That was the opening statement in her appeal to conservatives. But, see, there was a but in there. So for all you Christians and conservatives who may have been a little uncomfortable with the fact that she fully supports the LGBTQIA plus community, there's a but. So everyone can take a breath now. Oh, man. At least she said but. She says, but we must also ensure that our female athletes are protected and respected. And how can she say that? It's because she's stupid. She's a generally vacuous, empty, hollow model. That's why. She's a moron. And she doesn't understand that by fully supporting the LGBTQIA plus community means she cannot protect and respect not only female athletes, but females. She doesn't know that because she's an empty-headed moron, stupid person. That's why. And she goes on to speak to the issue of transgendered athletes in female sports, as if that's a topic that's worthy of discussion. She says this issue of transgendered men competing against women in sports, which are transgendered women, I apologize. I don't want to confuse anyone. What we're talking about here are transgendered women competing against women in sports. Figure that one out. The fact that we're even having this discussion means that our collective IQ has been ratcheted down by an order of magnitude, that we're even having to discuss this. And that politicians are actually scoring points in the election cycle based on discussing something as ludicrous as this. And here I am reading it, lowering my own IQ. She says, this issue of trannies competing against girls, this issue also has broader implications. Right? And then we're all on the edge of our seat because we're waiting for her to say, this is wrong. This is criminal behavior toward women. This is psychotic, insane, criminal, satanic evil. But here's what she says. She says the broader implications include the loss of future earning potential as professional athletes and a potential setback for equal pay in sports. You know, because all those college softball girl players, they all become professional athletes. As if that were even potential, a loss in future earnings potential, Melania? Are you serious? Is that why you're offended by trannies beating up girls and spiking the volleyball down on their face? All right. Breitbart goes on to conclude that President Trump has remained a staunch advocate of faggotry and against transgender athletes beating up girls in women's sports. He's against it all for similar economic and politically convenient reasons. And just shut up and vote MAGA. Make America great again and save America. I'm your host. That's right. Put your MAGA hat on backwards and get back out there and play. So, more. What do we have now? So we have here from the Moron Politics file. That's right. Moron Politics. Oh, Moron Politics. Here's another. I've been noticing a few of these articles, too. In addition to the Christian guilt trip stories on why we have to vote for Donald Trump. And I've also noticed a number of articles about the counting of the votes and how difficult that has become. It's not like a back before modern history when we could just count the votes on election day. That's not possible anymore. We all know why. Don't ask why. We all know why. And here's the article from Yahoo from my average moron file. I'm sorry, my average moron news feed that I have due to my Yahoo email account. I get the Moron Politics feed. How long will it take to know who won the 2024 election? Question mark. What to know about results? And then we're going to go on and explain to you why on election night. We certainly won't know on election night. Don't even expect to know. You shouldn't even have an expectation of knowing. Certainly, it's obvious election day is November 5th. What's not as obvious is when the results of the presidential race will be announced. Announced. Did you hear that? They actually said it. Not when they'll be counted, not when they'll be official, not when they'll be real, true, honest, but announced.
By CNN?
Fox News. Fox. Calling it firm. Yeah. The author over at Yahoo, if it's even a human being, it's a gender-fluid AI chatbot. Both Republicans and Democrats are ramping up for a barrage of legal challenges. Since the last presidential election in 2020, voting access changes made in response to the coronavirus pandemic have become a source of division. Hmm. Yeah. Division, yeah. Now, the chatbot doesn't point out that, yeah, there's a division between those who stole the election last time and those who were not allowed to question the theft. That's going to produce a natural rift. But we're not allowed to point that out because that's divisive.
Don't be divisive.
Our politics have become so divided and divisive. Well, that's because you have criminals on one side and normal people on the other. So, yes, there's going to be a division. All right. The Yahoo AI gender fluid chatbot goes on. Some key swing states aren't permitted to start processing absentee and mail-in ballots until Election Day, which is expected to slow down the count. It's because of those pesky rules that slow down the count. In the 2020 election, the high number of absentee and fake and illegal and forged mail-in ballots led to millions of backlog ballots. This caused delays.
Oh, I made up the part about fake, illegal, and forged. They just say there were a lot of absentee ballots and mail-in ballots, and that caused delays. And these delays provided an opportunity for Trump and his supporters to spread election fraud conspiracies. To bring up the idea that there was anything unusual about water pipes breaking and covering up the windows and going to bed with Donald Trump winning and waking up and him losing. To question any of that, it's an election fraud conspiracy. And so they're basically greasing the skids for the next election fraud conspiracy to take place. Yes, there was an election fraud conspiracy. There's no doubt about that. It was the people taping the covers over the windows and the ones backing up the trucks full of fake, illegal, alleged, forged, fake ballots. That was the election fraud conspiracy. But they project that upon anyone who questioned the election fraud conspiracy to prevent anyone from questioning the impending election fraud conspiracy that's about to be executed upon all of us. If Donald Trump manages to survive to Election Day, which it seems like he will because, I mean, unless they actually use a guided missile or a bomb, because they can't shoot straight. All right. Not for lack of trying, but
All right. So now from there, we go from politics. We go to, well, this is sort of political. An Afghan national, according to the New York Post, an Afghan national accused of plotting an ISIS-inspired election day terror attack was arrested in Tennessee, and it just so happens he worked for the CIA. I'm sorry, I was going to say the FBI, but it's the CIA. I got the wrong acronym. So anyway, this terrorist worked for the CIA in Afghanistan. His name is Nasir Ahmad Tawhidi. I'm sorry, he was arrested in Oklahoma, not Tennessee. I'm very confused on this story. See, he was charged with an alleged terror plot. He was employed as a security guard for the CIA, but he was not a CIA informant, says the New York Post, like they would know. How do they know? They asked the CIA, and the CIA said, no, he wasn't with us. No, he's not an informant. Oh, well, he might have been a security guard, but see, lots of people work for the CIA. They're not informants. He came to the U.S. in 2021, just weeks after the collapse of the American hegemony in the world and when the Taliban regained control of Afghanistan. So as the last U.S. troops were leaving and people were hanging and falling off the bottom of airplanes, this guy got a visa into America and started plotting a massacre. According to the New York Post, visas were doled out to more than 70,000 Afghans by brain-dead Joe Biden after the U.S. pulled out of Afghanistan. So they just put the stamp in Biden's hand and said, stamp these. And he's like, yeah, this is fun. And he stamped them. And so 70,000 potential terrorists were led into the United States, but that's not that big of a deal. So, and so people say, well, Doug, this is why we need to vote for Trump, because he won't let terrorists into the country like Biden did. And I say, but it's not worth with the baby killing and the homosexual tranny freaks. It's not worth it to me. At least with a terrorist with a rag wrapped around his head, I know who I'm fighting. Put me up against Nasir Ahmed Tawhidi. I'll take him above whoever Donald Trump is going to put into the government. I'd rather take my chances with Tawhidi there. Nasir Ahmad Tawhidi. I put an L in the middle. It's just Tawhidi. I said Tawhidi, but that's because I'm a racist. All right. Now, to the New World Order file, and this really is. Israel has confiscated the land on which the headquarters of the UN refugee program, the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, you've heard of this outfit, UNRWA, the UNRWA. Anyway, basically what it is an organization to kidnap and rape certain people and to help terrorists under the guise of helping Palestinian refugees. It's communist and sex perverts put against Israel in Israel by the United Nations. And they had their own sovereign state that Israel wasn't allowed to touch. Israel just took it. They took the United Nations UNRWA land there in Jerusalem. The confiscation of the land in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood is land in what they call occupied East Jerusalem. One member of the Likud party there in Israel denounced UNRWA as a hotbed for terrorism under a humanitarian guise, which everyone has known that for 20 years, 40 years, however long this outfit's been there. We've all known that. Well, the Jews just kicked them out and took the land, and they're going to build Jewish apartments there. And I think that's fine. The Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee approved two bills in recent days which aim at ending the United Nations Relief Workers activity and privileges in Israel altogether. They're going to kick the United Nations out of Israel. So this is a seismic event. This tells you that the Jews are serious this time, that they're going to, they're just not playing anymore, which it's about time. All right. From there, we go to reason number 1,253 to get or keep your children out of the government schools because They might be proselytized by tranny freak, sex pervert, child molesters who are rampant in the schools. One such example was a first grade teacher. Where is this? WPXI. Does it matter where it is? It's your town. It's wherever you're sending your kids to school. That's where this is. So I don't need to get into where exactly. It's anywhere in America. First grade teacher Megan read two books with transgender characters because it was the International Transgender Day of Visibility, which anyone who advocates that there should be something like that should be arrested. You can't publicly advocate criminal activity. And allowing delusional people to mutilate themselves and other people and then advocate for the mutilation of other people is criminal. So there shouldn't be not only should there not be an International Transgender Day of Visibility, it should be illegal to advocate for such a thing. And if you do so, you should be arrested, put on trial, caned. Because we allow this, a first grade teacher ends up reading books to innocent children about trannies on the day. Well, the parents were upset because they weren't notified. Right. Oh, yeah, I'm about to molest your child. Let me send you a note. So when the children came home talking about gender identity, the parents' antenna went up. Oh, their antenna finally went up. Okay. We have a quote here from the plaintiff's lawyer, Dave. He says, just because you send your child to public education doesn't mean you check your belief systems at the door. Unquote. Which actually it does. Sending your child to a government school, actually that does indicate that you check your belief system at the door. Have you not been paying attention to what's been going on in the government schools for the past 40 years? Are you so brain dead and asleep that you don't know? It is checking your belief system at the door. I'm sorry, Dave. What else does lawyer Dave have to say? Parents don't get to dictate what's taught, but there's a place for parents' viewpoints. So it's not like he wants the trannies out of the schools. It's not like he wants sexual perversion to be off limits. It's just that he wants parents to have a say and be given the opportunity to opt out of the molestation of their children's minds and bodies. And then lawyer Dave argued in front of U.S. District Judge Joy, and Joy issued a 94-page opinion on why she thinks that sex perverts shouldn't be allowed to read dirty books to kids. 94 pages. Tell me it's not the end of Western civilization. She says parents ought, in her 94-page opinion, the reporters over at WPXI were able to boil it down for us. Parents ought to have a right to be provided appropriate notice of what their children are going to be taught. And she said we didn't get that in this case. Parents weren't given enough notice about the sex pervert who's going to read the dirty book to their kids. Senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom, Vince, he said parents have a right to direct the upbringing and education of their children. School districts violate that right by leaving parents out of decisions about their own children. Now, who's leaving the parents out? Is it the school district who takes possession of the child that morning at 8 o'clock, or is it the parent who relinquishes possession of the child? Who's leaving the parents out? Is it the parent who drops the kid off and goes to work? All right. Anyway, I appreciate senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom there, Vince, who says parents should be involved in decisions about their own children. But he stops there without saying, flee the schools. This guy should stand up at the end of the trial and say, can you believe what happened here? A first grade teacher's reading dirty books to kids. Get out of here. Stay away. Flee. Run away. But no, he didn't. He acted as if someone needed to issue 94 pages to reason why that was wrong. And then I'm sure he crafted a fundraising letter to send out on behalf of the Alliance Defending Freedom to raise more money for more ludicrous civil cases against people who should be criminally prosecuted. Can you believe we're bringing civil cases against child molesters reading dirty books to kids? Surely it's the end of the world. All right. Now, speaking of all that, we go to the death penalty file where Scott Peterson didn't get it, meaning the death penalty, which means he could get out of jail. Scott Peterson has been granted access to old evidence in his bid for a new trial in California. Peterson, you may remember, was convicted of first-degree murder. Listen to how they report this at News Nation. News Nation? They should put a question mark after that in their official logo. News Nation reports that Scott Peterson was convicted of first-degree murder in connection with the deaths of his wife, Lacey, an unborn child. In connection with? What? Does that mean he, like, drove the car? He forged some bank statements, checks during the... So was he involved in some wire fraud associated with the murder? No, actually, he killed his wife and dumped her in the bays. But he was convicted in connection with the deaths of his wife, Lacey, an unborn child. You may remember that that happened. It was 20 years ago now? 30 years ago? Maybe 30 years ago? I don't remember. So it's been a long time. Oh, yeah. Lacey vanished on Christmas Eve 2002. Why did she vanish? Because he had killed her. And then he dumped her in the bay. Now, San Mateo Superior Court Judge Elizabeth has released a ruling addressing the Los Angeles Innocence Project's request for access to hundreds of pieces of evidence. That's right. Mark Garagos and Sheck. What's his name? Bernie Sheck. I can't remember. Barry Sheck. And the other deviant perverts over at the Innocence Project, they've demanded access to hundreds of pieces of evidence. They asked them, how many pieces would you like access to? They said, as many as possible. After all, we just want to throw them all in the water and stir them up like mud. So give us access to as many as you can. We're going to get this guy out. It's the last thing we do before we die and go to hell, is get Scott Peterson off. They're obsessed with getting Scott Peterson off. The Innocence Project filed to have items tested for DNA. Why? Because we might find something, anything that could cause a bit of a question to Susan. It's long enough, it's far enough, we blow some smoke, and pretty soon he's out of jail. And I just want to remind Mark Garagos and Barry Sheck that getting Scott Peterson out of jail is not going to help with you going straight to hell with jet rockets. It's not going to help. It might make you feel better. I don't know how it's going to make you feel better to get a murderer out of jail, but it's not going to help when you stand before God. All right. Mark Garagos said that the Department of Justice had all kinds of reports that were not turned over. Not only were there stuff that wasn't tested, there were all kinds of reports. That's right. See, now, Scott Peterson's family believes that a burglary that happened across the street may be connected to a van that may be connected to someone connected with the murder. Not Scott Peters. That's what his family believes. Investigators, on the other hand, proved in court that Peterson dumped Lacey's body in the bay during a fishing trip after he killed her and the unborn baby. But the family says, no, there was burglars across the street, and they killed her for no apparent reason. And then they threw her in the bay to in order to frame Scott for no reason. Since they were burgling the house across the street, they naturally wanted to kill Lacey. Yeah. And then they hated Scott. They framed him. They didn't know who he was, but they framed him. See? All right, Mom. Take another pill. Relax. So that's all we got from that. His family says, yeah, the burglars framed him. Okay. And oddly enough, in the state of California, it's quite possible this guy's going to get a new trial. It's quite possible. And it's quite possible he's going to get out of jail. Why? Because he's still alive, which he should not be. But he is. And so life without parole means life. You might get parole, is what it means. And you know what's embarrassing for the penal system and the people incarcerated? What's embarrassing is that nobody has killed this guy in 25 years in prison. How is it nobody killed this guy? You're all embarrassing, all you tough convicts. Yeah. Meanwhile, Rosie O'Donnell has become friends with the Menendez brothers. Do you remember the Menendez brothers? They shot their parents to death and then claimed that their father was a child molester, which means they should have been executed twice, if that's possible. Because that's like the worst thing you can do to a guy is kill him and then accuse him of being a child molester. There's probably no worse crime that you could commit against your father than what these kids did to theirs. The Menendez brothers were recently depicted in a Netflix series called Monsters, the Lyle and Eric Menendez story. Why? Because murder is entertainment fodder in America now. So we're so far away from our founding. Back when people had to worry about how they were going to eat and build their house and keep the bears away. We've gotten to the point where now we watch the vicious murders of innocent people for entertainment, and we binge on that, eating popcorn and watching TV. Lyle and Eric Menendez on Netflix. Apparently, they didn't like the Netflix series because it implied that they murdered their parents, which was what was proven in court. But they've condemned the Netflix series, not because of what I condemn it for being basically, it's like murder pornography that shouldn't be allowed. But anyway, the Rosie O'Donnell, on the other hand, she watched the series. She watched another series a couple of years ago that said they were actually nice guys. There was another series, right? And then she said she went out to lunch with Barbara Walters. And she said, "Barbara, you're not going to believe this, but guess who wrote me a letter?" And Barbara Walters said, "Who, Rosie?" And Rosie said, "Lyle Menendez." And Barbara Walters said, "Ignore him. He's a murderer. He's very cunning." Barbara Walters said that. Barbara Walters interviewed the guy, looked into his eyes. Anyway, so she tells Rosie, don't fall for that. But Rosie, because she's mentally deranged, she's fallen in love with the guy. She started writing him letters, and now she says she's his biggest cheerleader. She told Variety magazine that she told the Menendez brothers, "You're going to get out of here," meaning jail. And now Los Angeles County District Attorney George Gascon has announced that the Menendez brothers could be resentenced or released in light of new evidence.
What is that?
So they don't even go into what the new evidence is. Gascon just says, "I have new evidence."
Okay.
What about all the evidence at the trial? Well, forget about all that. There's new evidence. George Gascon probably thinks that springing the Menendez brothers from prison is somehow going to help him not go to hell. It's not going to help, George. But have you noticed that the members of the criminally insane sex cult are obsessed with getting murderers off? They're obsessed with it. So it all goes back to, it all goes back to Garden of Eden. But, I mean, this latest iteration, it all goes back to O.J. It all goes back to O.J., which was my wake-up moment, by the way, was when I watched the verdict come down in the O.J. trial, I realized that something dramatic has changed. This isn't America anymore. I knew right then that the air was coming out of the balloon, that the wheels were coming off. I could tell right then. All right. Now, meanwhile, here we go. From the Justice File, this is the Associated Press's favorite justice story of the century, of the millennium. Calvin Bowery. Calvin Bowery is reported by the Associated Press as trying to turn his life around. He was a flamboyant crack dealer in New York City back in the 1990s, and they say that that made him unsympathetic and an easy target for conviction because he was plying neighborhoods with drugs right when Mayor Rudy Giuliani was cracking down on crime in New York. And then on September 10th, 1992, two brothers, Elijah and Saladin Harris, were sitting in their parked car eating Jamaican takeout when someone shot them to death. And the crime happened on the block where Calvin Bowery was dealing crack. And so the police picked him up, and a jury convicted him of 2 counts of second-degree murder. He was sentenced to 50 years to life in prison. And the Associated Press reports that other than a rival drug dealer's false testimony, there was no evidence tying Bowery to the crime, according to the National Registry of Exonerations. The National Registry of Exonerations, which is similar to the Innocence Project, it's a bunch of deranged murderers. So they've participated in killing probably innocent children, since those are the easiest to kill. And so they have all this guilt, and plus they're lawyers. You know, that's got to be difficult. And so they circle around this. They tell us that was false testimony. So the guy's dealing crack in the neighborhood, and some people got killed in that on that block that night while he was dealing crack. Got picked up, and so it was false testimony, we're supposed to believe. Bowery is, he was recently exonerated with, exoneration should be in quotation marks. He was recently exonerated because they say it was false testimony of one drug dealer that convicted him, but they say this testimony overheard in a prison by another drug dealer, that proves he's innocent, because this other drug dealer said somebody else did it. And so we're supposed to believe that one drug dealer and not this other drug dealer. Why? Because we care about justice, innocence. Anyway, Calvin Bowery says he's still a work in progress. He strives to be a better man every day. And that involves, he says, thinking about the lives and neighborhoods he destroyed as a drug dealer. And he says that in regards to all the lives he destroyed as a drug dealer before he got arrested and sent to prison, he says, quote, I pray that a lot of those peoples are well. I'm sorry. Quote, I pray that a lot of those people are well and can find it in their hearts to forgive me. I once was completely lost. I'm still not completely found, but today I find grace in my actions, not my words. He says, going to prison saved my life. His redemption journey is far from over. It's just beginning. And why do I say that this is the Associated Press's favorite story of redemption? Is because it's redemption without Jesus. And that's what they love. They love reporting on, first of all, they love it when a murderer gets off. They love it when a crack dealer gets out of prison. And they love redemption, a redemption story without God, especially without Jesus. Not a single reference to Jesus, except almost when he says, I was completely lost, but I'm not completely found. So he almost referred to a hymn that even the atheists know. But he didn't quite, so they love it. Anyway, I put a Google alert. We're going to keep our eye on Calvin Bowery here at the Weekly Worldview, because we don't think he's innocent. We don't think he's been exonerated, and we do think that he will severely injure or kill someone else in the not-too-distant future, and perhaps even possibly end up back in prison. Possibly. We'll keep an eye out for that. All right. So one more. This was in the Justice file, but we had to take it out and put it in the Queering of America file. And it's Masterpiece Cake Shop owner Jack Phillips has been in court for 12 years over a legal battle over a tranny cake. And that's after being on in court for I don't know how many years over the homo cake. So anyway, they say now that his legal battle to defend his free speech rights allegedly ended on Tuesday. I added the word allegedly. The Daily Caller News Foundation says the Colorado Supreme Court dismissed a lawsuit finding the pervert, homo, queer, tranny attorney who challenged Jack Phillips for declining to create a cake celebrating a gender transition. The Colorado Supreme Court dismissed that lawyer's case because the lawyer did not properly file the case. And so the Colorado Supreme Court dismissed the case on a technicality. The attorney, Autumn Scardinia, filed a complaint with the Colorado Civil Rights Commission after the state and Phillips reached a settlement. And the other case, the previous case about the queer case was closed. And this tranny freak dyke perv lawyer immediately filed a new lawsuit in 2019. Well, the Colorado Supreme Court held last week that Skardinia should have appealed the commission's decision rather than bringing a new claim. In so doing, the Colorado Supreme Court says, "We express no opinion about the merits of Skardinia's claims, and nothing about today's holding alters the protection afforded by the Colorado Act for the Defense of Perverts and Queers and Other Degenerates, the CADA, whatever that is. That's Colorado's Anti-Discrimination, Pro-Sodomy, Pervert, Queers, and Creeps Act. Nothing about our decision today alters the protections, and we express no opinion about the merits of the claims." You'll remember the U.S. Supreme Court allegedly sided with Phillips back in 2018 in another decision that, it ended the case, but it further entrenched the public display of immorality, which is really what's at the bottom. The bottom of all this is the courts will not repudiate the public endorsement of celebration of perversion, but they will drop the case against Masterpiece cake shop owner Jack Phillips on a technicality, but they just further entrench the idea that it's good to publicly display and promote immorality, and that's what it's all about. And what this case actually means for Jack Phillips is unless he closes his cake shop, then the next pervert deviant can walk in and start this whole process all over again by demanding whatever it is they demand from Jack. And so that's why I said it allegedly ended its case. It's all alleged. All right. And that's it, I think, from the Weekly Worldview, because I can't take anymore. That's it. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. I want to thank my friends over at Real Science Radio. Thank you for tuning in. And should the Lord tarry, we'll be back next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.